You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English, and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 99 by Rudolf Steiner. 14 lectures translated by Johanna Kallas, entitled Rosicrucian Wisdom. And this is Lecture 6, entitled The Law of Destiny, given in Munich on the 30th of May, 1907. Today we come to the human being's experiences in the physical world, insofar as these are determined by an earlier incarnation. At the outset, it must be emphasized that life is not determined by previous incarnations alone, but also, though in small degree, by the current life. The law according to which the human being's past, present, and future are linked is called in spiritual science the law of karma. It is the true law of human destiny. An individual life is only a specific application of the great law of the cosmos. For the law of karma is a universal, cosmic law, of which human life is merely a specific application. Whenever we envisage a connection between preceding conditions and subsequent effects, we are thinking in line with this law. I want, therefore, to explain in detail the individual application of this cosmic law in the life of the human being. Suppose we have two vessels of water and put into one of the vessels a red-hot iron ball. The water will sputter and become warm. If we take the ball out and put it into the other vessel, the water in this case will neither sputter nor warm, because the ball is no longer red-hot. It has been cooled by immersion in the first vessel of water. The effect of the behavior of the iron ball in the first vessel determines its behavior in the second. Thus are cause and effect always connected in physical life. Subsequent behavior always depends on what has happened previously. Another example is afforded by certain animals, whose organs of sight have atrophied in consequence of their having migrated into dark holes or caves. In such animals, the substances which formerly nourished the eyes are sent to other parts of the body. Because, as it is no longer necessary for the eyes to see, these substances are not required. The eyes have atrophied and will remain atrophied in all subsequent generations. Through their earlier migrations, these animals determined the behavior of their organs. The destiny of subsequent generations was determined by what had happened in the past. These animals prepared their destiny for the future. The same goes for human life. Human beings determine their future by their past. And because their innermost being is not confined to one incarnation, but passes through many, the causes of what confronts them in a given life are to be sought in an earlier life. We will now consider the chain of events that becomes comprehensible if we think of the consequences of human deeds, thoughts, and feelings. It is often said in everyday life, thoughts don't cost anything, meaning that we can think what we like and nobody in the external world will be affected. This is one important point where someone who has really grasped spiritual impulses is at variance with the materialistic thinker. The materialist agrees that injury is caused if he throws a stone at somebody, but he thinks that a thought of hatred, which he may harbor against a fellow human being, does not harm him. However, those who have a real knowledge of the world know that far, far stronger effects proceed from a thought filled with hatred than can ever be caused by a stone. Everything we think and feel has its effects in the astral world, and the seer can follow with great precision the effect of a loving thought that goes out to someone, and the very different effect that is produced by a thought filled with hatred. When you send out a loving thought to someone, the seer perceives a form of light, shaped like a sort of flower calyx, playing lovingly around the person's ether and astral bodies, thereby contributing something to his vitality and happiness. On the other hand, a thought of hatred bores its way into the ether and astral bodies like a wounding arrow. Very varied observations are to be made in this domain. There is a tremendous difference in the astral world if someone voices a thought that is true or one that is untrue. A thought is related to a specific thing and is true if it coincides with that thing. Every event that happens causes an effect in the higher worlds. If someone relates this event truly, an astral form rays out from the teller, unites with the form emanating from the event itself, and both are strengthened. These strengthened forms help to make our spiritual world richer and more full of content, which is necessary if humanity is to make progress. But if the event is related untruthfully, in a way that does not coincide with the facts, then the thought form of the teller comes up against the thought form that has proceeded from the event. The two thought forms collide, causing mutual destruction. These destructive explosions, in quotes, caused by lies, work in the way a tumor works in the body, destroying the organism. Thus, lies kill the astral forms that have arisen and must arise, and in this way they obstruct or paralyze a part of evolution. Everyone who tells the truth actually promotes the evolution of humanity, and everyone who lies obstructs it. Therefore, there is this esoteric law. Seen with the eyes of spirit, a lie is a murder. Not only does it kill an astral form, but it also kills the self. Anyone who lies places obstacles along his own path. Such effects are to be observed everywhere in the spiritual world. The clairvoyant sees that everything a person thinks, feels, and experiences has its effect in the astral world. An individual's disposition, temperament, enduring qualities of character, thoughts that are not merely transient, all this streams continually, not only into the astral world, but into the world of Devakan as well. Someone with a happy disposition is a source, a center, of certain processes in Devakan. Someone who is mournful has the effect of multiplying the essences and substances associated with mournfulness in the human character. Thus, spiritual science shows us that we do not live as isolated beings, but that our thoughts continually produce forms which cause shades of differing intensity in the world of Devakan and fill it with all kinds of substances and essences. The four regions of Devakan, the continental, the oceanic, the atmospheric, and the region of original inspirations, are influenced all the time by the thoughts, feelings, and sensations of human beings. The higher regions of Devakan, in which the Akashic Record plays a part, are influenced by deeds. What happens in the external world plays into the very highest region of Devakan, the one we have designated the, in quotes, world of reason. We shall understand, in this way, how on descending to a new incarnation, the human being reconstitutes his astral body and attaches it to himself. All his thoughts, feelings, and experiences had become integral parts of the astral world, leaving many traces there. If his thoughts contained much truth, these traces would gather together to form a good astral body for him. What he has incorporated into the lower Devakanic world as his temperament and so on gathers together the new ether body, and from the highest regions of Devakan, where the Akashic Record is to be found, his past deeds play their part in establishing the sighting, the localization of the physical body. Here lie the forces that bring a human being to a definite locality. If a person has done evil to someone, this is an external fact that reaches into the highest regions of Devakan. When the time comes to enter a new physical body, it works as forces that the person has left in his wake, and impels him, under the guidance of higher beings, to the associations and the place where he will now be able to experience the effects of his past deeds in the physical world. Experiences in the external world that do not inwardly affect us very strongly work upon our astral body in the next incarnation, drawing into it corresponding feelings and a characteristic life of thought. If a person has spent his life profitably, if he has been very observant and has acquired wide knowledge, his astral body in the next incarnation will be born with special gifts in these directions. Experience and acquired knowledge thus express themselves in the next incarnation, in the astral body. Inner experience, all that a person feels in the way of happiness, sorrow, and so on. This works down to the ether body in the next incarnation and imbues it with lasting propensities. The ether body of someone who experiences much happiness will have a temperament disposed to joy. Someone who tries to perform many good deeds will, as a result of the feelings evoked, have a decided talent in the next life for good deeds. He will also possess a thoroughly developed conscience and will be a person of high moral principles. Everything carried by the ether body in the present life, the permanent character, talents, etc., appears in the next life in the physical body. For instance, someone who has developed bad inclinations and passions in one life will be born in the next with an unhealthy physical body. Conversely, a person who enjoys good health and has great powers of endurance unfolded good qualities in the previous life. A person who is continually prone to illness has worked bad impulses into himself. Thus we have it in our power to create for ourselves health or illness insofar as these inhere in the natural constitution of the physical body. All that is required is the elimination of bad tendencies, for we then prepare a healthy, vigorous physical body for the next life. It is possible to observe, in all details, how the tendencies that were present in one life work in the next on the physical body. A person who is disposed to love everything around him, who is loving to all creatures, who pours out love, will have in the next incarnation a physical body that remains young and fresh until late in life. Love for all beings, the cultivation of sympathy, gives rise to a physical body that preserves its youthful vigor. Someone who is full of antipathy against other human beings, who criticizes and grumbles at everything, trying to keep aloof from it all, produces, as a result of these tendencies, a physical body that ages and becomes wrinkled prematurely. In this way, the tendencies and passions of one life are carried over to the physical bodily life of the subsequent incarnation. This can be observed in every detail, so that we can see how a passion for acquisition, an urge that makes a person hoard possessions and becomes a rooted disposition in him, produces in the next life a tendency to infectious diseases in the physical body. It is perfectly possible to confirm cases where a pronounced tendency to infectious diseases leads back to an earlier, very strong sense of acquisition, the bearer of this quality being the ether body. On the other hand, impartial endeavor, free from any desire for self-profit and wishing only to work for the well-being of all humanity, this tendency in the ether body gives rise in the next life to a strong power of resistance to infectious diseases. Thus, knowledge of the connection between the physical and astral worlds enables us to have a clear understanding of the world in its inner process of evolution. Things are often connected in quite a different way from the one people like to imagine. Many people complained about pain and suffering. But from a higher point of view, this is quite unjustified. For if they can be overcome, then, when the person is ready for a new incarnation, suffering and pain are the sources of wisdom, prudence, and comprehensiveness of vision. Even in a modern work written from the materialistic standpoint, we find it stated that there is something like a, in quotes, crystallized pain in the physiognomy of every thinker. What this materialistically minded author says here has long been known to the spiritual researcher. For the greatest wisdom of the world is acquired by the quiet endurance of pain and suffering. This creates wisdom in the next incarnation. No one who shudders at the unpleasantness of pain, who is unwilling to bear pain, can create in himself the foundations for wisdom. Instead, when we look deeper, we cannot really bemoan illnesses. For regarded from a higher standpoint, from the standpoint of eternity, they take on a very different aspect. Illnesses calmly born often appear in the next life as great physical beauty. Great physical beauty in a human being is acquired at the cost of illness in a preceding life. Such is the connection between impairment of the body through illness, particularly also through external circumstances, and beauty. The words of the French writer Fabre d'Olivet can be applied to this very remarkable connection. When we observe the life of the human being, it often seems to be like the formation of the pearl in the oyster shell. The pearl can only come into being through disease. This is exactly the case in human life. Beauty is karmically connected with illnesses and is their result. When I said, however, that someone who unfolds reprehensible passions creates in himself the disposition to illness, it must be fully understood that in this case it is a matter of an inherent tendency to illnesses. It is a different matter when someone falls ill through working in a poisonous atmosphere. That, too, may be a cause of illness, but is not connected with the inherent constitution of the physical body. Everything that is a fact on the physical plane, everything that constitutes a deed, expresses itself in such a way that it has a definite effect in the physical world, from a footstep or movement of the hand to the most complicated processes, for instance, the building of a house, comes to the human being in a later incarnation from the outside as an actual physical effect. As you see, we live our life from within outward. What lives as joy, pain, happiness, sorrow in the astral body appears again in the ether body. The lasting impulses and passions that are rooted in the ether body appear in the physical body as constitutional tendencies. Deeds that require the agency of the physical body appear as outer destiny in the next incarnation. What the astral body does becomes the destiny of the ether body. What the ether body does becomes the destiny of the physical body. And what the physical body does comes back from outside in the next incarnation as a physical reality. Here you have the actual point where external destiny intervenes in human life. This working of destiny may be postponed for a long time, but must inevitably approach the human being sooner or later. If a human being's life is followed through the different incarnations, it can always be seen that life in a subsequent incarnation is prepared by beings who work at his physical embodiment in such a way that he is led to a particular place in order that his destiny may overtake him. Here again is an example drawn from life. At a Vaimic court in the Middle Ages, a number of judges condemned a man to death and executed the sentence themselves. Earlier incarnations of the judges and of the executed man were investigated, and it was found that they had all been contemporaries. The prisoner, who had been put to death, had been the chief of a tribe who had ordered the death of those who were now the Vaimic judges. The deed of the former physical life had created the connection between the persons, and the forces had inscribed themselves in the Akashic record. When a person again comes down to incarnation, these forces cause him to be born at the same time and place as those to whom he is tied in this way, and they work out his destiny. The Akashic record is a veritable source of power in which everything that is due to be expiated between one human being and another is inscribed. Some people can sense these processes, but very, very few are really conscious of them. Suppose someone has a profession in which he is apparently happy and contented. For some reason or other, he is forced to leave it, and finding no other occupation in the same place, is driven far away into another country, where he has to strike out on an entirely new line of work. Here he finds a person with whom he has in some way to be associated. What has happened in such a case? He once lived with the person whom he has now met, and remained in his debt for some reason or other. This is inscribed in the Akashic record, and the forces have led him to this place in order that he may meet the person and discharge his debt. Between birth and death, the human being is perpetually within a network of these forces of soul, which weave around him on all sides. They are the directing powers of his life. You bear within you all the time the workings of earlier lives, and all the time you are experiencing the outcome of former incarnations. You will realize, therefore, that your lives are guided by powers of which you yourself are not aware. The ether body is worked upon by forms that you yourself previously called into existence on the astral plane. Beings and forces in the higher regions of Devakan, inscribed by you in the Akashic record, work upon your destiny. These forces or beings are not unknown to the spiritual researcher. They have their own place in the ranks of similar beings. You must realize that in your astral body and in your ether body, as well as in your physical body, you feel the workings of other beings. All that you do involuntarily, everything to which you are impelled, is due to the working of other beings. It is not born from nothingness. The various members of the human being are all the time actually permeated and filled by other beings, and many of the exercises given by an initiated teacher are for the purpose of driving out these beings in order that an individual may become more and more free. The beings who permeate the astral body and make it unfree are known as demons. Your astral body is always interpenetrated by demons. And the beings you yourself generate through your true or false thoughts are of such a nature that they gradually grow into demons. There are good demons generated by good thoughts. But bad thoughts, above all those that are untruthful, generate demoniacal forms of the most terrible and frightful kind. And these interlard the astral body, if I may so express it. The ether body is also permeated by beings from which human beings must free themselves. These beings are called specters, ghosts. Finally, permeating the physical body, there are beings known as phantoms. Besides these three classes, there are yet other beings, the spirits who drive the ego hither and thither, the ego itself also being a spirit. It is a fact that you generate such beings who then determine your inner and outer destiny when you descend to incarnation. These beings work in your life in such a way that you can feel the demons created by your astral body, the ghosts or specters created by your ether body, and the phantoms created by your physical body. All these beings are related to you and approach you when the time comes for reincarnation. It can be seen how religious scriptures express these truths. When the Bible tells you of the driving out of demons, this is not an abstraction, but is to be taken literally. Christ Jesus healed those who were possessed by demons. He drove the demons out of the astral body. This is an actual process, and the passage is to be taken literally. The wise man Socrates also spoke of his daimon, which worked in his astral body. This was a good demon. Such beings are not always evil. There are, however, terrible and corrupt demonic beings. All demons that are born of lying work in such a way as to cause the human being to regress in his development. And because, owing to the lies of eminent figures in world history, demons who grow into very powerful beings are all the time being created. We hear of the spirits of hindrance, the spirits of obstruction. In this sense, Faust calls Mephistopheles the father, thou, of all impediments. The individual human being, integrated as he is within humanity as a whole, has an effect upon the whole world, according to whether he speaks the truth or lies. Beings created by truth or by lies produce quite different effects. Imagine a people that is composed entirely of liars. The astral plane would be populated solely by the corresponding demons, and those demons would be able to express themselves in a constitutional tendency to epidemics. Thus, certain types of bacillus are bearers of infectious diseases. They stem from the lies told by human beings. They are nothing other than the physically embodied demons generated by lies. Lies and untruths of earlier ages appear in world karma as a definite cohort of beings. A passage entitled Faust indicates how much deep truth is contained in myths and sagas. You will find there a connection between vermin and lies, and also the role of rats and mice in connection with Mephistopheles, the lying spirit. Legends have often preserved wonderful indications of the connection between the spiritual world and the physical world. In order to understand the law of karma, we shall have to speak about many other things. Spiritual science as a movement is itself the outcome of an intimate knowledge of the law of karma. You have just heard that forces which exist in the ether body work upon the physical body in the next incarnation. Thus, the attitude of mind, the tendency to think in a specific manner, works upon the physical body. A spiritual or a materialistic attitude of mind is by no means without importance for the next incarnation. An individual who has some knowledge of the higher worlds, he need only believe in their existence, has in his next life a well-centered physical body and tranquil nervous system, a body which he has well in hand, including even the nerves. On the other hand, an individual who believes in nothing except what is to be found in the world of the senses communicates this kind of thinking to his physical body, and in the next incarnation has a body prone to nervous disorders, a frail, fidgety body, in which there is no steadfast center of will. The materialist disintegrates into many separate fragments. The spirit binds together, for spirit is unity. In the individual, this tendency appears in his next incarnation, but it also continues through the generations, so that the children and grandchildren of materialistic fathers have to pay for this by badly constituted nervous systems and nervous disorders. A nervous era such as ours is the outcome of the materialistic attitude of the last century. To counteract this, the great teachers of humanity have recognized the necessity of allowing the inflow of spiritual ways of thinking. Materialism has even found its way into religion. There are people who believe in the spiritual worlds but have not the will to acquire real knowledge of them. Can it be said that such people are not materialists? It is materialism in religion that makes people want to have the mystery of the 6 days of creation, as the Bible describes the evolution of the cosmos, displayed before their eyes. It is materialism that speaks of Christ Jesus as an historical personality and ignores the mystery of Golgotha. Materialism in science is primarily a consequence of materialism in religion. It would not exist if the religious life were not saturated with materialism. People who have been too lazy to deepen their religious life are the ones who have introduced materialism into science. The derangement of the nerves caused by this materialism works itself out among whole peoples and nations, as well as in the individual. If the stream of spirituality is not powerful enough to influence lazy and easygoing people as well, then nervous disorder, the karmic consequence, will gain greater and greater hold over humanity. And just as in the Middle Ages there were epidemics of leprosy, so in future materialistic thinking will give rise to grave nervous diseases. Epidemics of insanity will beset whole nations. Insight into this domain of the law of karma should not make spiritual science a matter of strife, but a healing power in humanity. The more spiritual human beings become, the more will troubles connected with disorders of the nervous system and derangement in the life of soul be eliminated. The end of Lecture 6.